Jaguars Today is next on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
With the third pick in the 2014 NFL Draft, the Jacksonville Jaguars select Blake Bortles, quarterback, Central Florida.
So a guy that's extremely talented, wanted to be here, and, you know, possesses all the physical traits we're looking for.
You know, he's everything we preach. He's a guy that's a highly competitive guy.
This guy loves Jacksonville, and he's excited about this. And I'm pumped up to see all you guys here, man. That's a great job.
Now live from Everbank Field, 1010XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host, Tony Smith.
Well, a very fitting open today to Jaguars Today as we will be talking about the NFL Draft. I don't know about you, but I'm tired of talking about what the Jaguars are going to be doing at number three in any NFL Draft. Last year was Blake Bortles. We'll see what they're going to do. As 6 weeks from today, we will be in here on a Friday talking about what they did in the first round of the NFL Draft, just 41 days away now from the draft getting started up in Chicago. Welcome in. I'm Fat Tony. J.P. Shatterick will join me in here in just a couple of moments. We'll talk a little bit about the NCAA tournament yesterday that he was at, but a lot coming up on the show today. Mike Dempsey's still on vacation. He'll be back with us on Monday morning. I have, as you heard on the update there, Charles Davis from the NFL Network going to join me here in about 15 minutes to talk about the NFL draft, what he thinks the Jaguars may do. How does free agency change the picture of the NFL draft, if it does at all? We'll talk to Charles Davis about all those things, as well as who is the best pass rusher in this draft. As you're hearing a bunch of different names, Dante Fowler, the most common pick to the Jags right now. But based early on with the fan feedback spotlight today, it looks like some Jaguars fans out there would rather see a different name called there at number three. Today we're asking, with us being 6 weeks away from the NFL draft, who would you like to see the Jags take at number three? It may change over the course of the next month and a half, but want to kind of get the temperature of it right now as of today. Early on, Vic Beasley, the name that I'm seeing the most of. But we will talk about that a little bit later. We'll get into your answers. We'll talk to Charles Davis. The Jaguars made the waiver claim yesterday as well. Bernard Pierce, the running back from Baltimore, released after a suspicion of DUI arrest over the weekend. He's now going to be a Jacksonville Jaguar. We will go up to Baltimore, talk to Luke Jones, who covers the Ravens for WNST in the 11 o'clock hour, to get an idea of what kind of player the Jags are getting. Is this guy capable of being a starter in this league? What kind of role can he fill for the Jaguars on this roster? We got all that coming up today. Right now, though, I'm joined by J.P. Shatterick. Hey. I know you skipped. What's going on, man? I know you skipped Jaguars Thursday duty to basically cover the tournament last night, correct?
Yeah, that's right. How'd the show go, by the way? I didn't even get a chance to hear it. I was in the arena all night.
Which one? Jaguars Thursday?
Yeah, Jaguars Thursday.
I don't know either.
I'm sure it went well.
Yeah, I was watching the college basketball. I know Joe may know. How'd it go last night?
Oh, yeah.
You guys don't want to listen? I'm not going to tell you.
Fair enough. It was probably much better than normal.
You had the opportunity yesterday to be out there for March Madness, and what a day
it was
of madness it was. Not only in Jacksonville, 5 1-point games in the tournament. They only played 16 games yesterday. Yeah. 5 of them 1-point games, including the controversial ending between UCLA and SMU. But the first game here, unbelievable ending for Georgia State in that upset.
That was something that the whole scene was just picture perfect. The guy's son had not made a shot, not really much of anything in the first half. Gets hot in the second half. Hits one from 30 feet with 2 seconds to go.
Mm-hmm.
And his dad falls off the chair with a bad leg. His wife has to come help him up and the whole thing. And it's that's what it's all about. That's what the tournament's all about. That kind of stuff right there. And there's a chance that his son's going to go on to the league next year. So this is the moment they've been dreaming of since he was a kid. And they've grown up together in it. And it finally came true. We'll see if it happens again. They got one more round to go.
Yeah, it was cool watching the post game with that too, where he was saying, you know, he grabbed his sister or his mom, I can't remember which, but
it might have been the sister.
Yeah, but he was like, hey, you know, we're going to be on one shining moment. He's like, we watch that as a family every year, and this year we're going to get to be a part of something that special. But obviously, a really cool day here in Jacksonville yesterday. Did you get a chance to see the controversial UCLA, SMU?
I saw it on TV, and that's just talking to folks over there. It's just your interpretation of the rule. Is it in the cylinder, and does it have a chance to go in? Well, Yeah, you know, it didn't have really have a chance to go in, did it? I mean, so it shouldn't have been. In theory, it shouldn't have been. But it was, and it is, so you can't go back and change it now.
No, it was. I tweeted out, and people shouldn't listen to me talk basketball much. I don't pay much attention to basketball, right?
That's not a good sign at the start of the show.
No, I tweeted out yesterday after I was being berated about that situation because I was like, as far as I understand, yes, that technically can be goaltending, right? If you're touching a ball that's on the rim, that can be goaltending. And a lot of people were abusing me on Twitter. I was like, look, I do football. I do baseball. To some degree, I do soccer. I don't know all the rules for basketball specifically. And so I'm waiting for experts yesterday to come on the television and tell me that they were idiots for calling what they did or that they were right for doing what they did. And instead, I got half the people telling me that it was the right call, half the people telling me that they should never make that call. So nobody knows. Like, there's no clear-cut answer on this. It's not even like the Fail Mary a couple years ago, you know, where everybody watching it was like, what are you doing? You know, what kind of call is that to make at that point in the game? It's clearly an interception. It's definitely not a touchdown. But by the rule, they can call it a touchdown.
Now, remember, I go back to the early 80s, the NC State run, right?
Right.
The survive and advance, the championship game against Houston.
Uh-huh.
The long desperation shot slash pass that Hakeem Olajuwon said later, he didn't want to go up and have a chance of goaltending, so he didn't jump.
Right.
Because there could have been a chance of gold. You don't want to take that chance in that kind of situation of it being a goaltend and them calling it the wrong way or the right way or whatever way it is.
Mm-hmm.
So he didn't jump at all.
Right.
And the NC State guy did. Made the shot. That's the way it happened. So
yeah.
In this instance, he did jump. He touched the ball. Was it close enough? The interpretation by the officiating crew is that it was.
Yeah, and man, that kid was devastated. Did you see any of his press conference after
that? I did not. I missed that
part. He was almost in tears saying, it's on me. You know, I can't jump up and touch the ball in that situation. I know I can't. He was a senior, too. I mean, yeah. I can't imagine that being your moment in the tournament and that being what you're going to remember for the rest of your life. Obviously, a handful of good games here last night, including
really
that
good.
One.
I mean, three of the four were down to the buzzer.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
Arkansas last night, 56-53.
I thought Wofford had those guys, too. They
yeah.
had them all game long and just couldn't finish it at the end.
But kind of cool. You see a 13th seed win here in Jacksonville. Last week we had you in for a couple of minutes, and we were talking about our top five sporting events we've ever attended. Does Georgia State go on the list?
That might be in the top five now. That was pretty cool yesterday. It really was. And if Harvard would have won, if they'd have called timeout, Amaker didn't call a timeout, they had one left. They could have set up a shot and maybe had a better chance to win that game against UNC, but they didn't do it. That could have been another one. It could have been two in one day here in Jacksonville of they're both 13 seeds, too.
Right.
It's unbelievable.
Right. The 13 seeds, the low seeds did very well for themselves yesterday in turn, which makes me think today is going to be all chalk. Like, it'll just balance itself out after the madness that we saw yesterday. I know you covered the Jags, too. Wanted to get your thoughts before we
Wait a minute. What? Do I?
Yeah. Oh. Before we get rolling with the show today, Bernard Pierce being brought in, the running back from Baltimore, do anything for you?
I didn't see it coming, I guess. I saw it yesterday come across the wire, and I'm, you know, the running back need is there, you would think. Does it fill the need for not drafting one? I don't know about that. But it's a name. He's been in the league for a little bit. Yeah, the issues aside, look at the stuff on the field and see for yourself. But for me, I mean, it's a back, and he's here.
So sure.
He's had some experience in the league.
No, he's going into his fourth year, still a young guy.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things, again, going to have Luke Jones on from Baltimore in the 11 o'clock hour. This is a guy that 2 years ago, after his rookie year, they go up, they win the Super Bowl in his rookie year. And going into his second year, it was thought that his role was going to expand in that Baltimore running game. And you were going to watch Ray Rice as he's getting a little bit older, kind of watch that role reduce a little bit. And both of them, if you go back and look at the rushing numbers for Baltimore in 2013, were just awful. I mean, 2.9, 2.8 yards a carry between the two of them. And then it was like, well, what do we do now? And then Ray Rice got in the trouble he got into. Last year, Bernard Pierce was supposed to step in. And it would be a very comfortable situation for any running back. You're running for Kubiak in that offense, and you saw what Justin Forsett did. He fumbled early on in the season. couldn't get back on the field. So now he's here in Jacksonville. I mean, it's a really interesting story for how he even wound up in Jacksonville at all.
Well, he might have a chance to in camp, it sounds like. You know, this is a wide open gig from the way you look at it. I mean, with Toby getting healthy at the end of the year last year and,
sure.
and Denard getting hot for a 3 or 4 game stretch, that's it. There's not I don't think anybody's the incumbent starting running back here.
No.
You know, I mean, so Jordan Todman's gone, so he's
right.
out of the equation. So you got to have some bodies here.
No, you do, and he adds to that list. One other note before we let you go.
Yeah, man.
Dwayne Bowe signed with Cleveland yesterday.
How old is he now?
30, I want to say.
Okay.
Obviously didn't catch a touchdown last year in Kansas City because no wide receiver caught a touchdown last year in Kansas City. But he signs with the Cleveland Browns yesterday. And the note that went along with it on Twitter was, Dwayne Bowe signs in Cleveland. Basically, Jacksonville was interested in Dwayne Bowe if he didn't sign with Cleveland. Which makes me wonder, are they still more in the market for a veteran receiver than we even realized 2 or 3 days ago?
Well, I mean, who's the veteran receiver on the roster right now? Tandon Doss?
I think Aurelius Benn.
That's
are the
about
two
it.
Fourth-year guys, yeah.
So, yeah, I think they are. I don't think you pay him an arm and a leg to get him here. But, yeah, you got to have somebody. And your core guys are your second-year guys now. That's pretty clear that you're going to move forward with Allen Robinson and Marquise Lee and Alan Hearns, if he can keep up that pace, which mm-hmm. we'll see if he can or not. At least the first two of those three are the guys you kind of move forward with. And that makes sense. So you kind of build around that now. You get some older guy in. Maybe draft one, and then you see from there. But yes, absolutely, they're remarkable because you gotta have an old soul in the building in that room.
You would think so.
You right?
And Dave Caldwell basically said as much after the season, and they felt like again we keep going back to it, but they made a mistake not having more veterans in that offensive room.
Yeah.
And they have an opportunity this offseason. They obviously really liked Randall Cobb.
Well, yeah, that would have been an answer too. Right?
Right, they really liked him, but he went back to Green Bay. So you feel like they may be looking to add a veteran receiver, but that market is dwindling. And to hear that they may be interested in Dwayne Bowe, which I think a lot of fans are like, Dwayne Bowe?
Right.
Of all people.
Guy's been around.
Right, of all the guys that have been in this league. And they're looking for a guy that can play the slot. So maybe they're looking for that bigger, more physical slot type guy, which is where Allen Hearns has been playing anyway.
Right.
He kind of fits that mold.
And it always doesn't go perfectly. You know,
no.
Things happen, and this is not Madden. So guys go back to their teams, guys sign with other teams, and time marches on.
Sure.
Sorry.
Sure.
There it goes.
I know a couple more games coming up tomorrow night.
That's right. Yeah. Another practice day today across the street, and then press conferences. I'm involved in that at 1:35 today for the Georgia State first. That'll be interesting to watch, and then they'll row through the next few hours after that. And then tomorrow night, primetime basketball, man. Can't get better than that.
The
Cinderella's at just after 6 o'clock, so everybody can see them nationally. And then the Blue Bloods after 8 o'clock, UNC. So should be some good basketball tomorrow night.
He's JP Chadwick. Thanks for coming in for a few minutes with me.
Hey, good to see you, man.
Good to see
you.
Hey,
when's Mike getting back? He's on vacation.
Mike's back on Monday. He's chilling with the kid, man. Kid's on spring break. He said, I'm taking spring break, too.
It's a good dad.
Yeah, it's a very good dad. We'll see him back on Monday. Thank you again, JP Shadrick, joining me here for a couple minutes from Jaguars.com. He's covering the tournament this week. March Madness taking over even down here at the stadium. Charles Davis from the NFL Network. We will get some draft fever coming up next as we will peek ahead to the NFL draft with Charles Davis from the NFL Network, who is part of Path to the Draft every weeknight at 6 o'clock there on the NFL Network. We'll talk draft. We'll talk the Jags at number 3 and what they may be looking at the end of April. That's coming up next here on Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, a Friday edition of Jaguars Today. It's a Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday here on the show. Mike Dempsey, his last day of official vacation. He's still got the weekend off, as we all do. We'll be back with you on Monday. Mike Dempsey back in the saddle. Until then, you got me, Fat Tony. I'm joined right now by Charles Davis at CFD22 on Twitter. You can hear him on Path to the Draft weeknights on NFL Network at 6 p.m. They will lead you up to the NFL Draft at the end of April. We're just 41 days away from the first round of the NFL Draft. Welcome in, Charles Davis now. Charles, how are you today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me. Hope things are going great on your end.
No, they absolutely are. We appreciate you giving a few minutes of your time today to talk a little bit about the Jaguars and the upcoming draft. Free agency, Charles, still ongoing. There's still a handful of those bigger name players out on the market. For you, how much of an impact does free agency have on your evaluations of different teams' needs going into the draft?
Oh, it can have a major impact, Tony, just because some teams prefer to fill their needs from free agency first. And when I say prefer, meaning if there are guys they have targeted that they think can either put them over the top or solidify a need, whether it's a stopgap or even for the long term, like an Ndamukong Suh, where you kind of go all in on that one. But others may say, listen, the draft is deeper in certain positions. Let's fill our needs at the position that we have to have trouble, which may not be as deep in the draft. Let's see if we can get a free agent or two, plug in and go from there. So until all the dust settles from the free agency, you know, and as we called it, NFL Network free agency frenzy, until all that settles, total draft boards are not set, but teams know the directions they want to go. They know what they're trying to accomplish.
How much, you know, how much does flexibility matter when you get into the NFL draft? Like for a team like Jacksonville, who it feels like they did address some needs in free agency, they went and got a guy that can start at right tackle, a guy that can play the auto for him at least, and that was a position that they didn't have anybody really on the roster that could even play out there for them. How much does flexibility help you once you get into the draft in April?
Oh, it's huge, absolutely huge, because The ability to feel like you've either solidified some things or have things well covered, and now you're looking at your other needs, but you're also saying, if a great player at a position that is not of need is available, I can go get him too. Because I'm a big believer, Tony, that you can upgrade your team even at a place that we don't identify as a need. Does that make sense? In other words, we say, well, this is covered. Oh, that player fell? Well, he's better than what I've got on my roster. I've just upgraded my team. And some people may look at it and go, but that doesn't make sense to me because you've already covered that. Go get another player. Yeah, well, it's kind of like the NBA draft. I've got Clyde Drexler. I'm going to take Sam Bowie and pass on Michael Jordan. Would I have been better with Jordan? Probably. I'd say, yeah. But we thought that we had the need still. And remember, Clyde Drexler's a Hall of Famer. But think about how much better your team is if maybe you have two of them as opposed to one. That's kind of how I go about it.
Sure, and for the Jaguars, I guess that type of player would be Leonard Williams, right, Charles?
Yeah.
Where they have two guys that can play that left-end position. They have a lot of guys that are flexible, kind of moving in and out in those interior spots on the defensive line. But if you feel that good about a player, you pull the trigger because he makes you better.
Yes, and for Dave Caldwell and Gus Bradley and the rest of that great front office, that's kind of what it comes down to. Do you feel like he makes us that much better by taking him, and as you talked about flexibility, other guys may be moving around, or do you say, I feel good enough that as great a player as he is, my need is such in another spot, and I think that player is a great player at that spot, i.e. an edge pass rusher. Could it be a Dante Fowler, you know, a Shane Ray, a Randy Gregory, a Vic Beasley? What's your flavor? You know, it's that type of a deal. So you make that move there. It's one of those beautiful problems to have, but you better solve that problem accurately. You know, like having the number one pick. Sounds like a great thing. Number one pick in the draft, we'll get a great player. But you better hit on him, and he better be what you think he is. Otherwise, it sets the tone for you, and it's not a good tone.
Charles Davis at CFD22 on Twitter. You can hear him on Path to the Draft weeknights on the NFL Network, Monday through Friday at 6 o'clock leading up to the NFL Draft at the end of April. Again, just 41 days away from the draft. Charles, right now, what are the chances of the two quarterbacks, Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota, coming off the board 1 and 2?
I think that right now they're a little bit slimmer than they would be in most drafts where you have a clear 1 and 2. You know, quarterbacks, especially considering, Tony, I haven't run into too many people, and I know that you talk with a lot of people around the league. I've not run into many people that have a third quarterback as a first rounder. So if you don't have that and you're thinking, I better go get my quarterback, if you're Tennessee, are you really sold on Zach Mettenberger? You're saying you are, but are you really? So that becomes really where the issue is. But I'm getting the sense that they want to go in a different direction, that Mettenberger is not the direction they want. I mean, is not the guy that they want to, you know, say, hey, you're not our quarterback, that they want to go Mariota there. So if that's the case, I'm thinking Winston's almost a lock at one unless something else happens. And then two, if I'm Tennessee, I'm making a lot more noise that I like Mariota. Come talk to me if someone's really interested in coming up, because there are a few teams out there that are making that kind of noise. You probably heard the same thing I've heard. The Chargers might possibly be a team of interest now, which people wouldn't have expected. But you're 1 year away from, you know, from Phillip Rivers actually being off the charts in terms of a contract. You know, we always talk about the Jets. Would they truly be interested in Marcus Mariota? Do they think his personality fits New York? Which is something that people have to consider. Is Washington really going to be sold on RG3? Or are they going to say, you know something? Let's go ahead and pull the trigger there. I don't believe that. I keep hearing it. I don't believe it because I think the owner really is sold on Robert Griffin. He's kind of all in with him. And while the football people may want to do it, I don't think the owner will let them. So at 10 with the St. Louis Rams, well, they just got Nick Foles. But I don't think that they're out of the market for a quarterback for the future either. So this could be a whole lot of fun as we see how the draft board gets manipulated.
Yeah, and I completely agree with you, Charles. We talked about this a few days ago. I don't understand why Tennessee isn't making more noise, at least, that they like Marcus Mariota. It can't hurt them for that noise to be out there that they like him, unless they really are just in love with a guy that they feel like they can only get at 2 and wouldn't be able to get that type of player moving down. I would assume if that's how they feel, they probably feel that way about Leonard Williams, who I know in your last mock draft you noted is your top-rated player in this draft. Why?
Because of something you said earlier. I'm going to go ahead and use your words. Versatility. Guy can play in a lot of different spots. You know, he went there as a true, pure defensive end to USC. I remember when he first got to school and I was talking with their coaching staff and they used the words SEC defensive end, which is high praise in college football. And I know nowadays, Tony, it drives people across the country crazy when you say, and he was an SEC this and, oh, SEC, I'm sick of hearing about. What they mean is build and ability. High cut, high waisted, sprinter type defensive end, not overly bulky, gets to the quarterback. Well, he's grown since then. They actually moved him inside to the defensive tackle or in a 3-4, more of a defensive end to 5 technique. And then when you get into those sub and nickel packages and he rushes inside over guard, that's a matchup that he is just dominating. And what I like most of all about him is last year, Tony, what did we, with Jadeveon Clowney, the talent was never the issue, was it? The talent was always, we all knew the talent was unreal. We were always wondering, would he play hard every down, right? I mean, that was the biggest discussion we had. Have you heard that from anyone that you've talked with in the league about Leonard Williams?
Nope.
Actually, I mean, it's got plays hard. Exactly. Plays hard, practices, has played through shoulder issues the last 2 years. And you know what games I always particularly check out about top-rated players? Is their bowl game. Especially those who are not playing in a game of monster stakes. Meaning, in the old days it was BCS. Now it would be the playoff four. Or, you know, a traditional monster bowl game like a Rose or a Sugar or, you know, that sort of deal. So I'm going to give you a couple of guys that stood out in bowl games. Leonard Williams, if you go back and watch what he did against Nebraska, did that bowl game have a ton of meaning ultimately? Not really. When you think about it, what's it going to affect one way or the other? He could have shut it down, played it safe. He was ragdolling people the whole game. And Dante Fowler Jr. at Florida, if you haven't plugged in his East Carolina bowl game tape in Birmingham at Legion Field, which is halfway condemned, you know, feel like no one's there, no one cares. Dante Fowler didn't get blocked that day. Didn't have to play that kind of game. And you contrast that, he had a teammate, who I will not name, who who chose to shut it down because he was worried about what would happen in the NFL. Let me tell you something. Dante Fowler is going to be one of the top five picks in the draft, more than likely. His teammate that shut it down may not get picked. Talk about misplaced priorities. But, boy, don't think the league doesn't notice guys who play in games like that.
No, absolutely. Charles Davis from the NFL Network joining me here talking a little NFL draft at CFD22 on Twitter. You mentioned Dante Fowler, and he has become the most popular player as far as mocks to Jacksonville in the last month or so. Do you feel like he is the best available of the pass rushers in this draft once you get past Leonard Williams?
Yeah, I do. And he's a better pass rusher, pure pass rusher off the edge guy than Leonard Williams. Leonard's going to be a different guy that you got to deal with in all facets of the game. But Fowler coming off the edge, very strong. I think that he can play the run really well. In addition, you know, he has the strength to get there. He also has the agility and the motor. And as I told you before, plug in that East Carolina tape. There's a play that he makes where he actually drops into coverage. Play goes away from him. Play ends up coming back towards him. He abandons coverage, rushes the passer, and totally disrupts the play. All, and when I say in the space of a 30-yard, you know, area, which is a lot of ground to cover on a pass play. And here I am watching Dante Fowler cover all of it and affect the play to the point where the play gets snuffed. I just think that he's just tremendous. I really do. I think he's the best pass rusher off of the top. But you're going to have champions of different guys. These people will have a flavor. Randy Gregory from Nebraska is a natural, smooth, elusive pass rusher. Got hurt early in the season last year. Took him a while to get his legs back under him. Came to the combine what people thought was underweight. I think he came to the combine deliberately underweight to run faster and to move quicker. He's got the frame. He'll put on weight. He'll play at 250 before it's all said and done easily, maybe even bigger. Vic Beasley is a undersized guy who put on weight for the combine and carried it well. He weighed 246, Tony, at the combine, and then told some of our people, yeah, I played somewhere around 240 this year. I fell off my seat laughing because there ain't no way, okay? Beasley had to play in the 220s. No chance, but he is a fast guy. And in Shane Ray, he didn't test off the charts yesterday at his pro day. Plug in his tape against DJ Humphries, who is my number one left tackle in this draft, and watch that game and see if Shane Ray can play. The answer is yes. And Bud Dupree is a guy who's getting a lot more run out of Kentucky. My question with Bud Dupree is only one thing. Some games I find him, and I think he's tremendous. Some games I can't find him. He should not be as hard to find, in my estimation, for a big-time elite player. That's my only thing with Bud Dupree.
Charles, do you give players a draft grade when you're evaluating? And if you do, how many players did you give a first-round grade to this year?
Yeah, I don't give them the draft grade where I've got first round here, second round here. I kind of estimate as I go. So when people ask me about guys, I will tell them what I believe his range is more than anything. Because you and I both know how the draft goes. There are a bunch of guys who have first-round grades who won't get picked in the first round. There will be guys who have second-round grades that may go in the first round, third-round grades. I bet my favorite is Duane Brown, one of my absolute favorites, the left tackle for the Houston Texans. He went in the first round, late in the first round of his draft, and I couldn't find anyone who had anything above a third-round grade on it. Looked like Houston knew what they were doing, didn't it? Doesn't it, nowadays? So.
Yeah.
So that's how I end up doing it. I mean, other guys will have that, and you'll hear me say I've got a first-round grade on a guy or what have you, but I couldn't sit here and tell you the numbers that I have. I would just tell you if I think he's a first-round talent or not.
A couple more minutes here with Charles Davis from the NFL Network Path to the Draft weeknights on the NFL Network at 6 o'clock leading up to the NFL Draft. Looking at running back, how likely do you think it is that Melvin Gordon and or Todd Gurley are available to the Jags at the top of the second round? Or do you feel like both those guys wind up going in the first?
Yeah, they're both gone before the second round. I think they're both gone. Everyone's waiting for Gurley's latest medical to come back. As you probably know, Tony, when we go to the combine, you know, the guys get tested every which way, right? I know the guys go prepared for testing, but I think they all walk out going, oh, my God, they test everything. I mean, it's unbelievable what they do. Gurley, as you may remember, at the combine, chose not to go through the medical testing. And at first, it became a little bit of a kerfluffle, like, whoa, hey, why is he not? And I was like, hold up a second. Did he or did he not just have ACL surgery? I've been there. I've seen it. I've gone through it. The last thing you want is 32 different teams poking and prodding at a rehabilitating knee. He and his crew knew exactly what they were doing, said, uh-uh. No, he's rehabbing. We know what's going on. Leave him alone. You come out of there, like a lot of these guys, that's why the combine, you can't take as a full gospel sometimes. Depending on if you've had a past injury, they can be poking and prodding you, and each team wants their own guy to look at you. You will come out of there glowing from x-rays and sore from everyone poking at that previous injury. So Gurley's people said, stay away, leave him alone. They go back about a month after the combine, Tony, for guys, and have a retake of medical. The last thing I heard is that Gurley and his crew will go back for that, and that's when we'll get a better evaluation. So it should be coming up sometime soon. If it hasn't happened already, I haven't gotten a word on it yet. But I did get the word that he's tracking very well, should be good for training camp, and that'll do nothing but continue to move his stock up. I think he's the best running back in the draft. The only reason I think a lot of people have him number two is because of the ACL.
You have Kevin White, the wide receiver out of West Virginia, mocked to the Raiders at 4. So based on your mock draft, I know that you believe this could happen. But should a player like White, with one productive year who measures off the chart at the NFL Combine, move ahead of a player that's been as steady a player as Amari Cooper on draft night? Not could he, but should.
Yeah, that's the roll of the dice, isn't it? And we've had plenty of examples of why it shouldn't happen, because we have those one-year wonders at wide receiver. I think White's a little bit more than that, a little bit different, but I get where everyone is coming from. In fact, I went to Pro Day at Alabama, Tony. You would have gotten a kick out of this, okay? Just envision the two of us pulling up at Pro Day at Alabama, okay? We get out of the car. Okay. We walk inside. We get our credentials, all right? You're still with me, right? Two of us, all right?
I'm with you.
Hanging together, the two fellas. We get our credentials, we walk inside, we take about 4 steps, and there's Chris Carter, Hall of Fame wide receiver. He's there covering for, you know, a rival network, right? He's over there at ESPN. I look up, hey, CC. Hey, David, come here. I need to talk to you. And launches into you got Kevin White over Amari Cooper? We have a 15-minute discussion. 13:35 of it is Chris talking about why I'm wrong on my evaluation. And it's one of the best talks I've had, because this is a Hall of Fame receiver I'm listening to, right? So this is one of those ones where you shut your mouth and open up your ears and listen to what he's saying. I told him my reason. He actually listened to me, which he didn't need to do, because I'm nowhere near a Hall of Fame. And we have a great discussion on it, and we kind of agree to disagree. But the whole time this has gone on, Tony, even before I met with Chris, even whatever, I'm going to throw one thing at you. That pick at number 4 is where we think is the break point, right, about Cooper and White, don't we? Someone's going to make a decision because we think Oakland is likely to go receiver, right? Would we agree on that? Is that accurate?
I absolutely agree with you, yes.
So at 4, Oakland has to make a decision. I think they're going to evaluate both of them very highly. Here's where I think the tiebreaker is. You ready? Young quarterback, lack of success in how many years, probably most of our formative years now, right, that Oakland's been worthy of being a good football team. And with that, you can't afford to quote-unquote miss. And last but not least, do you know the makeup of the front office of the Oakland Raiders? The GM played at Tennessee. Director of Player Personnel played at Tennessee. They've got an SEC background. If you look at last year's draft, it wasn't an SEC draft. So don't take from that, people, that, oh, they're SEC people, are going to take SEC guys. That's not my point. My point is, when you have tiebreakers,
sometimes you kind of fall back on your roots. And by the way, Amari Cooper gives you every reason to take him. It's not one of those fallback positions. He gives you a reason to list him as number one. I have no qualms with him being listed as number one. I think that White can do everything Cooper does, wasn't asked to do that in his offense, and is that type of an explosive guy. I did have one scout say one thing to me that gave me pause, though. And he said, here's where I think the difference is between the two of them. White is powerful, strong, run through tackles, the whole deal. He said, but in our league, you don't run through tackles as much as you make people miss in order to make big plays. Cooper is a more elusive, creative runner. That's why I give him the edge. Words to think about.
No, absolutely. It sounds to me like as a Tennessee alum, Charles, you ought to be able to get in with that Oakland front office. But before I let you go, what are your general thoughts on the Jaguars and the direction of this franchise right now?
Oh, I'm bullish on them, very much so. I you know, look, we can't ever take bias out of what we do in terms of if you know someone, if you like someone, but I think that I'm professional enough to take some of that out and just look at the overall. I just like the direction they're going from ownership on down. You know, we're not hearing that talk about the Jaguars being part of LA anymore. You know, we're hearing much more of improvements at the stadium, anchoring things in the community better. The London thing's not going to go away, but that's okay. You know, it's one time a year. You know, they're positioning themselves that way as being a team that can be a little more global. I like that part for them. But I really think that with Dave Caldwell and Gus Bradley, who work very well together, are doing, is putting together a solid base for a team. Not hitting the panic button when things don't go quite right. You know, not doing all of that. They took the quarterback last year, which shocked everyone. But now you get your quarterback for the future. And this draft and the next draft, I don't think are big quarterback drafts. So they went ahead and pulled the trigger on him early. I think that they did that with vision looking ahead, and I give them points for that. I think that this team, you know, think about how they played during last year. They took this totally folded tent. They didn't. I like the direction they're going. And I think that they understand that this is a big year. The fans need to see a little bit more. They need to see some more wins on the ledger. And the coaching staff obviously gets that. I know the front office gets it. I have no worries about this franchise. I think they're tracking in an excellent direction. Very bullish on what they're doing. Love the ownership. And I just think they're going to be okay down the road.
He is Charles Davis at CFD22 on Twitter. Obviously covers the NFL draft for the NFL Network. You can hear him on Path to the Draft Monday through Friday, weeknights at 6 p.m. leading up to the draft at the end of April. Again, just 41 days away. Charles, thank you so much for a few minutes of your time today.
Thank you, Tony. You take care of yourself. And are you headed back to the arena to watch some NBA hoops?
Not today. Maybe tomorrow when we get to round number three.
Yeah, tomorrow you get to round
certainly
two.
The city's
how
buzzing.
How about that? Pretty good in Jacksonville.
Yeah, man.
I wish I'd been home because I wanted to go see it because I knew Wofford and Harvard were going to give people a lot of trouble. And, boy, great game.
Oh, it's been fantastic to this point. Thanks again, Charles.
Thank you, Tony. Take care now.
All right. That's Charles Davis from the NFL Network. Hopefully we can catch up with him again before we actually get to the NFL draft. Kind enough to join us for a few minutes today. We will talk a little bit about some of his thoughts on the NFL draft, where he thinks the Jags were going there at number three. Really, really, really likes Dante Fowler to the Jags there at three. We'll talk about that as we continue on a Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday edition of Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Oh, I very much enjoyed that conversation with Charles Davis of the NFL Network, so much so that I went way too long with him when everything was said and done. A lot to react to with Charles. If you want to react, you can. 641-1010 is the phone number, as well as our text line, the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line, there at 641-1010. If you have thoughts on what you heard from Charles Davis, it goes in line with our fan feedback spotlight question of the day today. We're simply asking, what would you like to see the Jaguars do with that pick at number three? We're 6 weeks out from the NFL draft, 41 days exactly from the first round of the NFL draft up in Chicago. So today we're asking, what would you like to see the Jags do at number three? You can respond on Twitter at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Tyler, or on our Facebook page, facebook.com/JaguarsToday. Charles Davis talking about what he would like for the Jags at three, really raved about Dante Fowler, especially what he saw out of him at his bowl game there against East Carolina. Obviously not playing the highest level of talent in that game, but talking specifically about in games where you feel like players can kind of let down, let off a little bit, specifically mentioned Leonard Williams and Dante Fowler Jr. as two guys who don't seem to have that let up in them. Really liked him as a pass rusher, said that he liked him against the run as well, and even mentioned one play where he was dropping back into coverage, which is something he may be asked to do if he's not a pure Leo for this team, perhaps competing for that auto spot. Who knows where he would go. But Dante Fowler, obviously a guy that's being mocked to the Jags a lot right now. I'm curious to hear people's thoughts as we get closer and closer to the draft about why Dante Fowler is filling that spot on a lot of mock draft boards. And Charles Davis, I thought, explained it really well. I know a lot of fans out there were asking you today, and we're getting a lot of Vic Beasley. And I have some of the same concerns that Charles expressed there. I don't particularly like the ballooning weight from a guy like Vic Beasley, but I think he's a really good player. I just feel like the same thing he said about Bud Dupree, a guy that sometimes disappeared in games. I felt like when I watched Vic Beasley play, I didn't notice him. When I watched the Gators play, I always noticed Dante Fowler. That doesn't mean he needs to be the pick at number three. And again, we can get your thoughts on it as well. 641-1010 or on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line at 641-1010. We got this date in football history, the Honda Drive around the NFL, and a lot more to dig into with what Charles Davis had to share with us there as we continue on a Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday edition of Jaguars Today here on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history presented by the Best Fence Company of Jacksonville on this date in football history, March 20th in 1958, born in the great state of Florida. Ricky Jackson, the linebacker defensive end, drafted by the New Orleans Saints, played his last couple years with the San Francisco 49ers, inducted into the Hall of Fame just a handful of years ago back in 2010, but born on this date in 1958. Happy 57th birthday to Ricky Jackson. That is this date in football history. At Best Fence, the mission is to fabricate and install the highest quality product at a competitive price while providing unsurpassed customer service. Fencing is an investment in your home. Your family will feel protected. You'll breathe easier knowing Best Fence installed your new fence. Best Fence provides professional free estimates at your convenience. You can call them today at 904-268-1638 or visit bestfencejacks.net for more information. And that is this date in football history.
Now, the Honda Drive around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
The Cleveland Browns have signed former Chiefs wide receiver Dwayne Bowe to a two-year deal. ESPN's Adam Kaplan said the Cleveland Browns were concerned that that Bowe could sign possibly here with the Jacksonville Jaguars. Also, Indianapolis Colts linebacker Eric Walden and his female companion were attacked by an ex-girlfriend of Walden's in Brazelton, Georgia. The ex-girlfriend tried to steal Walden's gun away from him after she swung a baseball bat and broke the arm of Walden's female companion. The ex-girlfriend then ran away and returned shortly after, where she slashed Walden with a knife while he was trying to escort her to the hospital. Police tracked her phone down to a nearby hotel where she was later arrested. Tony, I hope you've never had an ex-girlfriend like that.
No, nothing close to that. Not even close. That's a horrific story involving them. Dwayne Bowe, that's an interesting note on that, because I don't think it was on anybody's radar as far as the Jags even being interested in a guy like Dwayne Bowe, and for it to come out that maybe the Jags were the next team in line for his services after Cleveland brings back the idea that maybe the Jags are more in on some of these veteran wide receivers than we realize at this time. Dwayne Bowe obviously off the market now. Does that open the door for maybe some interest in a guy like Greg Jennings? Perhaps. It's clear that the team is willing to put a bigger wide receiver there in that slot position. Dwayne Bowe seems to fill that kind of need a little bit more than Greg Jennings would to me. Greg Jennings sounds like a guy who really wants to go back to Green Bay with some of the quotes that he's had. I saw one yesterday, quote, "I've had my struggles with the quarterback." So a quarterback would be nice. It sounds like he doesn't want to go anywhere where they have a young, developing quarterback or issues that position, which may or may not preclude him from even being interested in Jacksonville. Michael Crabtree is a name that's still out there, but there's been no movement on him. He had a visit with Miami yesterday. No word that the Jags would be involved in any interest in Michael Crabtree right now. But the Dwayne Bowe news certainly does open back up that door for, are the Jags still looking to fill that role of a veteran wide receiver in this offense? And it would make sense if they were. Maybe this weekend we find out something that we don't currently know. My guess is that they're probably not in on Greg Jennings. I think if they were going to be on Crabtree, we would have known by now. But maybe if they were going after Bowe, they were waiting to see what was going to happen with Dwayne Bowe to make a decision on Michael Crabtree. But my guess is those two guys aren't coming to Jacksonville. If there's somebody else in the veteran free agent market that they could look at, maybe a guy like Nate Washington or something like that, maybe that would make sense for the team. Charles Davis joined us about 20, 25 minutes ago talking the NFL draft, specifically the Jacksonville Jaguars. And again, thank you to him for giving us a few minutes of his time this morning. If you want to react to anything that Charles Davis had to say, you can at 641-1010 on the phone lines or the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line at 641-1010. We'll get to as many of your calls and texts as we can. We do have Luke Jones from Baltimore coming up here in about 15 minutes or so. We're going to go up there, take a look at Bernard Pierce, the waiver acquisition of the Jacksonville Jaguars yesterday afternoon, get a bit of a scouting report on that player. But interesting stuff from Charles Davis earlier today, talking about the Jags and that number three pick and the direction he feels like this team is going. I always enjoy hearing from guys that are covering the league. And, you know, when we talk about the difference to me between the Mark Schlereth and the Trey Wingos, these guys who are on shows that talk about the NFL, and guys who cover the league. You know, the Daniel Jeremiahs, the Mike Mayocks, the Charles Davises, the Chris Mortensens, those types of guys. When you talk to the guys who cover the National Football League, the perception of Jacksonville has shifted. It's changed in the last handful of years. They feel like this is an organization going in the right direction. I think a lot of the guys who talk about the NFL for a living haven't quite caught up to that. But the guys who cover the league feel good about the thing, the decisions and the direction of this organization. Charles Davis echoed that when he joined me. And it's always good to hear those kinds of things. It doesn't mean anything in the end. Like, it doesn't mean you're going to win more football games because some expert feels good about some of the decisions that you're making as an organization, but it makes you feel a little bit better compared to the whipping boy that this city and this team was just a handful of years ago. So at least the perception in some circles continues to come around a little bit. All right, let's get back out to the phone lines for the first time this morning. Let's welcome in Mike at 641-1010. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning. How you doing?
Doing well.
Hello.
Yeah, you got me?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was listening to your show, and I was listening to Charles Davis, and Leonard Williams would make a perfect defensive end for this team, but I disagree with the pick with Dante Flower. I do apologize if I mispronounce his last name. I suffer with a speech impediment. But the reason why I disagree with that is because the Jacksonville's defensive line doesn't have the players to really support Dante Flower. To support him at that position. The team, what this team really needs, and you kind of touched upon it, with a veteran wide receiver. Maybe not a veteran wide receiver, but a wide receiver who can truly be a number one wide receiver for this team. And that wide receiver may be Cooper out of Alabama. What do you think?
All right, Mike. Appreciate the call here. And it's, I'll go back to a conversation that I had with John Osier on Wednesday here on the show. When you look at what the Jaguars have done to this point in free agency, they bring in a guy to play right tackle. They bring in a guy to play that auto position, although he doesn't necessarily have to start, but he's the starter for now. You could address that position certainly still in the draft. They bring in a guy to play corner. They bring in a guy to play free safety. They bring in a guy to play tight end. They bring in all these guys. They're addressing a bunch of positions where this team needed to add players and depth. And starting caliber players. They've done that in free agency, or at least they feel like they have. So if you start looking at the real team needs for the Jags. Obviously, they feel like slot wide receiver is a need. Otherwise, they wouldn't have gone after Randall Cobb as hard as they did. They wouldn't have potentially been interested in Dwayne Bowe to maybe come in here and play the slot, as we've heard in the last 24 hours or so. They obviously consider that a need on this team. I would say linebacker is still something that they would be looking to get depth at. Free safety is still a position I wouldn't be surprised if they address in the draft. Get some kind of depth still on that offensive line. Running back, even with the addition of Bernard Pierce, I think would still be a position of need for this team going into the draft. And that left defensive end spot, that pass rushing spot there on the defensive line. And when you look at that list of needs, and you look at where they are in the draft and the value of where they are in the draft, to me, I think you can eliminate everything except left defensive end and potentially wide receiver, Mike. Now, when you look at that, they have a couple of young guys playing the wide receiver position right now. The future of the left end spot on this team, as it's put together right now, you have Chris Clemens, who has, what, a year, maybe two left in him, but one or two good years left from Chris Clemens, and I think the idea when they brought him in was to get two or three pretty good years, last productive years out of Chris Clemens, and then figure out what they were doing beyond that. Andre Branch is coming into a contract year, so you're going to have to make a decision on his future on your football team. I don't think you've seen anything from Andre Branch to this point that would make you feel comfortable saying that in 2016, if Chris Clemens is done, that he's going to be your starting left end. I haven't seen enough out of him to feel good about that. I think that you look beyond that on this depth chart. Ryan Davis is a guy I think they like inside. He's more of a pass rusher in that NASCAR package that they have on third downs getting after the passer, and he's been effective doing that. Would he be effective being a down-in, down-out Leo? I don't think so. And then Chris Smith, that's the depth chart they have at that position. So potentially that right end spot, that rushing end spot for the Jacksonville Jaguars, the top two guys on your depth chart that you feel okay about could be gone in a year, which is why when I look at that number three spot in the NFL draft, it makes all the sense in the world to me that this team would be looking to address that position specifically in the draft. And that's assuming, in my own head, that Jameis Winston is going one and Leonard Williams is going two. I think Leonard Williams would be the exception to that for me if he did become available to this Jaguars team. But they have so little there right now at that right end spot. They have so little there. And it could all be gone in a year. We keep going back to what Dave Caldwell has said about his mentality in the first round of the draft, right? Where he talked about if you're going to be picking in the top five, top ten, you want to address left tackle, quarterback, pass rush. Left tackle, quarterback, pass rush. And we keep saying, well, they've drafted a left tackle, they've drafted a quarterback, so this year it makes sense to draft pass rush. And I think putting that piece together with the way the roster is put together right now, it makes all the sense in the world for that number three pick to be a pass rusher. Now, whether it would be Dante Fowler or Vic Beasley or any of these other guys, Shane Ray, Randy Gregory, any of these guys that have been talked about for the last couple of months, wouldn't surprise me if any of them were the pick. I think that it's becoming pretty clear just based on the way that the stories are being written right now that Dante Fowler is probably the most likely right now, but that doesn't mean anything because we're still in March. We still got 6 weeks before this thing gets played out, and we still have a couple of weeks before real information starts leaking out of these buildings in the NFL and the experts have a better idea. I think they're taking their best guess at what it is right now. You heard Charles Davis earlier. He really likes Dante Fowler. He just really likes Dante Fowler when he watches it on tape. He likes that player, and he thinks that he's the best pass rusher in this draft, which is why he has him slotted into that number three spot to come here to Jacksonville. The fan feedback spotlight question today asking you, at number three in the draft, what would you like to see the Jaguars do? Who would you like to see them pick there at number three? You can get involved with that on Twitter, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Tyler, or on our Facebook page, facebook.com/JaguarsToday. You can continue sending in your texts if you would like on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line, 641 641- 1010 is the number there. We're going to go up to Baltimore. We're going to take a look at Bernard Pierce, the new running back for the Jacksonville Jaguars, who they claimed off waivers yesterday after he was released from the Baltimore Ravens. We'll talk to Luke Jones up there with WNST and get a better idea of what kind of player the Jacksonville Jaguars are bringing in as their new running back as we continue on a Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday edition of Jaguars Today here on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Rolling along here on a Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday on Jaguars Today. Had a texter in on the text line at 641-1010, Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. He said, hey, Fat Tony, pull up the stats on Beasley and Fowler for the last 2 years and compare. Just saying. And look, yeah, Beasley's stats are much better than Dante Fowler's for the last 2 years. I don't necessarily think that means that he's going to be a better NFL player or fit for what the Jaguars want to do, but certainly his stats are better, and that does say something. Like I said, I get nervous about a guy who played at 220, then goes up to 245. He's still really athletic, and maybe that makes a lot more people believe in him a lot more than I do. I'm not saying that you're wrong for believing in Vic Beasley. I'm not even saying that I'm completely convinced that Dante Fowler is the guy that the Jaguars should take at number three. I don't know who I like for the Jaguars at number three yet. I can tell you that I'm trying to figure out why a lot of people are convinced that it is Dante Fowler. Nationally, they're convinced that it is Dante Fowler right now. And why a guy that a month and a half ago was being considered a 10 or 11 is now virtually penciled in at three on all these mock drafts. What changed in the evaluation of this player? I'm trying to figure it out just as much as you are. And maybe the pick should be Vic Beasley. I haven't made up my own mind on where I think the Jaguars should go with the pick. I can tell you that I'm leaning towards pass rusher. That's as far as I can go with it right now. Right now, let's get out to the phone lines, though. Luke Jones at Baltimore Luke. He covers the Baltimore Ravens and the Baltimore Orioles as a beat reporter for WNST. Kind enough to join us today and talk a little bit about the newest Jacksonville Jaguars running back, Bernard Pierce. Luke, it's been a while since I've talked to you, man. How are you?
Doing well. Just ready for winter to be over. More snow in the Baltimore area today, and clearly with free agency now more than a week into that, baseball season right around the corner, and of course draft, as I just heard you talking about the draft. But the Jaguars pick up Bernard Pierce, who certainly made headlines for the wrong reasons this week.
No, he definitely did. I'm sorry to hear that you're getting snow. I was a little annoyed because there was fog this morning and 70 degrees here in Jacksonville.
I can't complain too much. I was in Sarasota for in late February covering the Orioles. But, yeah, just rub it in, why don't you?
Yeah, I'll try when I can. What kind of player are the Jags getting in Bernard Pierce?
Well, I mean, Bernard Pierce, just a couple years ago, I mean, he was a third-round pick in 2012 out of Temple, had a great collegiate career. Late in his rookie season, he really took off. He averaged 4.9 yards per carry, finished the year with over 500 rushing yards, and there were plenty of sentiments. And, of course, I'm talking about the Ravens Super Bowl year. There were plenty of sentiments going into that postseason that Bernard Pierce, not that he should be starting over Ray Rice, but certainly should have been taking some of the workload, and it really was looking like the Ravens were on their way to having one of the best running back duos in the NFL, and here, less than 3 years later, they're both gone. Very simple with Bernard Pierce. One, he's been someone who's been bothered by nagging injuries at various times. Hasn't been something that's forced him out of action. He's only missed three games in his career, and a couple of those were healthy scratches last year just due to being ineffective. But beyond that, I think the big key for him, the Ravens went to more of a zone blocking scheme in 2013. They had offensive line issues. That was the year Ray Rice was terrible. Bernard Pierce was even worse, only averaged 2.9 yards per carry. And then last year, the Ravens got things situated with their offensive line. Justin Forsett explodes onto the scene, takes the job away from Bernard Pierce after Ray Rice was suspended and then gone after the second video surfaced after the season opener. Pierce had his opportunities, but just was not comfortable in his own scheme, indecisive, just not really the explosive runner that we'd seen in his rookie season. I think he's more of a man power kind of runner, just blocking scheme straightforward. He hits the hole, and I think he can be effective in that way. But when you're asking him to read and look for running lanes that aren't necessarily going to just automatically be there, he's someone who's lacked patience, and I think that's something that's really hurt him over the last couple years.
You know, I know you talked about it, but what has specifically gone wrong for him? I know you talked about some nagging injuries. I felt the expectations from outside of Baltimore, too, Luke, just looking at the team from the outside looking in, that a couple years ago there were a lot of people that expected Bernard Pierce to really cut in to what Ray Rice was going to be doing in that offense. Now, Ray Rice and Bernard Pierce 2 years ago were atrocious as running backs in that Baltimore backfield, which is why they bring in a guy like Kubiak last year. It's why they changed the way that they're blocking for the run. And you saw Justin Forsett and the results that they got from that. But was it as simple as he just wasn't comfortable 2 years ago? What went wrong when that opportunity was given to him to really step up into the spotlight?
Well, like I said, I think just the zone stretch and the zone schemes where it's really predicated on patience, trusting your blocking, waiting for a hole to open, waiting for that seam to develop, and then you take it. Pierce just was not comfortable in that kind of a scheme. Like I said, I mean, he's had some nagging injuries here and there over the last couple of years that have just, you know, he's played, but it less than 100% at various times, knee issues, shoulder issues, you know, a whole array, but I think you just looked at him with the Ravens' new running scheme, just did not look comfortable, whereas you saw Justin Forsett look very, very patient, would wait for running lanes to develop, and he'd hit the hole hard. I think with Pierce, just very indecisive. That's the term I used with him over and over in 2014 when he had his opportunities. Very much indecisive, and had a fumble in the season opener. And really, from that point on, Justin Forsett had a strong second half in week one in a loss against Cincinnati last year, and really never relinquished that starting role from that point on. Pierce had opportunities here and there, and it wasn't completely awful. I mean, he averaged 3.9 yards per carry, had his moments, but he was more a guy that the Ravens kind of used as more of a closer in the fourth quarter when teams were when opposing defenses were wearing down. He had a little more success then, but anytime he was given opportunities to kind of handle the workload when things hadn't been determined, he didn't do it. And just to show how far he had fallen by the end of the season, he was behind Forsett. He was behind rookie Lorenzo Talaferro. Talaferro ended up going on IR late in the year with a foot injury. The Ravens gave carries to Fitz Toussaint, a rookie free agent out of Michigan, in the postseason in a couple spots where you would have thought Pierce might have gotten the ball. It just shows how far he had fallen. And I think really with him, the DUI was the last straw as far as him being released this week. But talk to anyone who's really followed this team closely. Bernard Pierce was far from a lock to even make the 53-man roster this summer.
Luke Jones at Baltimore Luke on Twitter covers the Ravens and Orioles for WNST up in the Baltimore area. So you weren't surprised with the news coming out this weekend, the suspicion of DUI, and all that combined with everything else that's been going on within that organization for the last calendar year or so, you weren't surprised with the quick release of Bernard Pierce?
Not at all. And you just said it. A lot of it really hinges on what's happened over the last 13 months. I mean, this is an organization that's had 8 player arrests. Their director of security is currently facing legal problems. So, I mean, it's clear that they have a perception problem, and, you know, it's something that prior to that, now the Ravens years ago, Ray Lewis, Jamal Lewis, I mean, there was a stigma, but for a long time, this organization had really repaired that reputation, and just has not been the case over the last year. They had 5 arrests last year, 2 other arrests this offseason, but they were cases where it was guys that either on the way out, like Terrence Cody, was not going to be re-signed, or Victor Hampton, who was just someone who was a long shot, basically a camp body. Was the best way you could view him as far as in this organization. So with Pierce, I mean, we're talking about a different level as far as some ability, but he was someone who very clearly was disappointing on the field. And given the state of the current backfield, the fact that the Ravens are probably going to be looking to draft a running back for the future with Justin Forsett going to be 30 years old this year. With Pierce, I mean, he had a chance to be on the roster. I'm not saying he wouldn't have made the team, but I think all of those factors coming together, it was pretty apparent once the news broke on Wednesday morning, he was going to be gone.
as someone who's covered him for his first 3 years in the league, Luke, leave us with this. Do you believe that Bernard Pierce can be an effective starter in this league, or is he going to be more of a role player for an offense if he's going to find a place on a roster going forward?
Well, like I said, I think a lot of it's going to be fit. I think it's going to be what kind of blocking scheme. I mean, just in the zone stretch that the Ravens ran under Kubiak, and they're going to continue now with Mark Trestman coming over, they're keeping the same blocking scheme. He never looked comfortable in that kind of a scheme. If it's more of a man power and you know, a short yardage situation, those types of things, I think Bernard Pierce can have success. I don't think he is someone that you can view as the answer in the backfield for the Jaguars moving forward. I think, and when we're seeing this around the league, more committee-type approaches anyway, I think he is someone with a good offensive line, with a scheme that makes sense for him. And if he, quite frankly, can kind of look at himself and commit and be a little bit mature, a little bit more mature himself with what he does, I think he's someone who can certainly have a role as at least a number two back, a complimentary guy. But again, other than his rookie year, and even then, we're talking late in that season. It was about a 4, 5, 6 week stretch. I haven't seen nearly enough evidence to endorse the idea that he can just be a starting back in this league. But, he's someone with the right parts around him. I think he can be someone that can help the Jaguars running game.
He is Luke Jones, covers the Ravens and Orioles for WNST up in Baltimore, at Baltimore Luke on Twitter if you want to give him a follow. Good catching up with you, Luke. Hopefully we get the opportunity to speak again before the draft gets here in 6 weeks or so.
Absolutely. I look forward to it. I always enjoy talking to you guys.
All right. That is Luke Jones up there in Baltimore giving us a little bit of insight about the Jaguars' newest running back, Bernard Pierce. You don't like hearing that he doesn't think that he's very comfortable in his own scheme if you're Jacksonville, but he is a player who's at least got some experience in that zone scheme, and maybe that's part of why the Jags brought him in. It's not going to cost him much. He's, again, if he doesn't grab onto the roster here, that's fine. You walk away from Bernard Pierce, and it's no harm, no foul from a Jacksonville Jaguars perspective, but it certainly sounds like, at least while he was in Baltimore, not completely comfortable in that zone scheme, more of a manpower guy, which, have we heard that conversation about anybody else on this Jaguars roster at the running back position? Does Toby Gerhart ring a bell for anybody? It seems like we've been having that conversation all year long about how they used Toby Gerhart last year. So the running back position still cloudy here in Jacksonville, but another body at least in that backfield with Bernard Pierce coming down here to Jacksonville. We'll see how they use these guys going forward. I know it's funny watching along on Twitter and Facebook and social media, the fans out there, a lot of you, as soon as a guy like Bernard Pierce is being claimed off waivers, are like, does that mean they're going to cut Toby Gerhart? No, it doesn't mean they're going to cut Toby Gerhart. First of all, the team likes Toby, so there's no reason for them to cut him. Secondly, as aggravated as the fans are with Toby Gerhart and what he did on the field last year, which I completely understand because he wasn't near as productive as the expectations were for him going into the year, but he suffered a serious ankle injury at the very beginning of the season, and maybe he never was the same guy. Now, you don't want to hear excuses? You don't have to. You can be as mad at Toby Gerhart as you want. I can tell you, I'm curious to see what it looks like with him being healthy in an offseason. That doesn't mean I think that Toby Gerhart's going to be the answer at running back for the Jags. I think that answer is still coming in the draft. I think they will draft a running back somewhere in the first four rounds of the draft. Somewhere between round two and round four, I think the Jaguars are going to select a guy that they think can be potentially their running back and find the roles for the other guys in this offense, whether it be Denard Robinson, Toby Gerhart, Bernard Pierce, whoever it happens to be alongside that guy. I believe that's the direction this organization is trending. Who knows who's going to be available to him there at the top of the second round? Charles Davis said, don't expect it to be Melvin Gordon or Todd Gurley. I tend to agree with him there. I don't think either one of those guys will be available to the Jags when everything is said and done. I know they talked to Ajayi earlier this week after his pro day, so maybe that's a guy to keep an eye on for the Jags at the running back position, but it certainly doesn't sound like Bernard Pierce is being brought in here to carry the load, and nor should he be. The fan feedback spotlight today, we ask you, Jaguars fans, what's driving you, brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships. Today we're asking, what do you want to see the Jaguars do with that number 3 pick in the NFL draft? You can get your answers in still at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Tyler on Facebook, at our Jaguars Today page on there. We'll get to some of your answers. What do the Jags do at number three? We'll take a look 6 weeks away from the NFL draft next as the Claude Nolan Cadillac continues, Friday continues here on Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Little Beasties here on your Friday. The Fan Feedback Spotlight today, brought to you every day by the Tom Bush family of dealerships. We asked Jaguars fans, what drives you? Today in the Tom Bush Fan Feedback Spotlight, we asked, who would you like to see the Jags take at number three? 41 days away from the first round of the NFL draft. That's 6 weeks, people. It's just 6 weeks away. And if you consider the fact that you got March Madness for the next three weekends, by the time that's all said and done, if you do lock in for that sort of thing, we're talking about 3 weeks until the NFL draft. It is upon us already. Charles Davis, kind enough to join me earlier today and talk a lot about the NFL draft. And, of course, we will be getting different experts on throughout the next 6 weeks as we get ready for the draft here on Jaguars Today. Mike Dempsey will be back in with me on Monday. The Fan Feedback Spotlight, some of your responses today on Twitter from @IrishJaguar. As of right now, I want it to be Vic Beasley. No doubt that will change 30 or 40 times over the next 6 weeks. From Daniel, I want to see the Jaguars take Leonard Williams or Dante Fowler. From Michael, the following Browns picks, 12, 19, 77, 112, and 186. He noted that they have 2 fourths and 6. So Michael projecting the trade down there in the first round. I assume they're coming up to get Marcus Mariota in that case and going down to 12. What would be available to the Jags at 12? It opens up the possibility for wide receiver. Does a guy like Bud Dupree slip down to number 12 where the Jaguars could potentially get him there? Who knows where Vic Beasley in the end is going to go? We don't know where any of these guys are going to wind up right now. From Isaiah, he says Vic Beasley from the Duke of Duval. Excuse me. Anyone who can get to the quarterback on a consistent basis. From Eric, I want to see a trade and acquire more picks, but if that can't happen, then Dante Fowler would be nice. From the Hardy brothers, we got Amari Cooper to fill the slot receiver role. As Dave Caldwell said, we need to help Blake. An interesting note, Tyler, I know you passed this along to me earlier this week. I forget where you got it from, but talking about Amari Cooper playing in the slot and his time at Alabama, they said that when he played in the slot, it was pretty much a guarantee that he was running a fly pattern. He was running a 9 straight down the field when he got in the slot. Do you remember where you heard that from?
Yeah, that was ESPN's Lewis Riddick. He used to be with the Browns. He said he watched a lot of tape on Amari Cooper, and a month ago he tweeted this saying 99% of the time when he lines up in the slot, he's just running straight down the field.
That would be interesting. I wonder if the Jaguars were considering taking a guy like Cooper if it meant they were going to move Marquise Lee inside, if that would make more sense for them. I don't know, but certainly a guy just running 9 doesn't mean he can't run other routes from the slot, but it's just curious that that's what they did with him when he was in the slot at Alabama. From Brandon, he said, I'll take Fowler. Yeah, I'm biased. Want to fight about it. So I guess Brandon must be a Gator fan. From some of the responses on Facebook that we got from Aaron Williams or trade back. Derek said a pick by someone else, so he wants that trade as well. From Kevin, if Williams is there at 3, you snatch him up quick. If not, Fowler at 3 would be a good pickup. Allen said, not sold on Dante Fowler, would rather trade back. Jeremiah, Leonard Williams, if gone, Fowler. From Armand, Leonard Williams, case closed. May not be able to get him there at 3, Armand. That's the problem. Johnny said, as a Florida State guy, it's hard to say a Gator, but Fowler, if no trading takes place. From Shane, Williams, Fowler, or trade down. If Mariota is still there at 3, we might be able to get a huge windfall of picks. So that's some of your responses. Again, we'll probably be taking the temperature on what you want to see happen there at the number 3 spot in the draft several times over the next 6 weeks as we get ready for the NFL draft. But it's split right now, it feels like, between Fowler and Beasley among the fan base. I know we had a texter in at 641-1010 on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. 266 said, all the defensive ends that we're talking about are really 3-4 outside linebackers. Not a good fit for this defense. If they take a wide receiver at the 3rd pick, say a guy like Amari Cooper. In round two, they could, he mentioned a couple guys they could come back and take there as more fits for a 4-3. I'll say this. Look, I don't know what the Jags are going to do at three, obviously, but when you look at just the size of the guys we're talking about, Vic Beasley is a little bit undersized compared to some of the other guys that we're talking about. But if it, Dante Fowler is basically the same size as Andre Branch. And Chris Clemens, I don't know if he's put on some weight over the course of the last, you know, handful of years since he got in the league, but I know when he came into the league, he weighed in somewhere around 240 pounds, 235 to 240, and he's playing that right end position for the Jags. Dante Fowler weighed in at 260 and basically the same height as both Andre Branch and Chris Clemens. He's certainly big enough that he can play that kind of position, and he's an accomplished enough pass rusher that I think you could feel comfortable with him playing there on the right spot, right end spot. And for me, again, it goes back to what they need most. They drafted two wide receivers in the second round last year. And I'm not saying that because you did that, you don't keep surrounding Blake Bortles with as much talent as you possibly can. Right? I'm not in favor of that. I'm saying that you have the opportunity potentially at number three in this draft where you have no depth at that right defensive end spot, especially going into the future. You have nobody right now on that defensive line. Sendarek Marks is your best pass rusher right now, Jack. From the defensive tackle spot, Sendarek Marks is your best pass rusher, and he's an 8-sack guy in his best year coming off an ACL. That's your best and most consistent pass rusher. They have to get better at that. They have to get better getting after the passer. And they have an opportunity at number three in the upcoming draft, potentially, to get the guy that they like the most as a pass rusher in this draft. They just, they can. I don't know if a team like Jacksonville right now can pass up that kind of opportunity to go draft another wide receiver. Doesn't mean they don't like Amari Cooper and what he could potentially bring to this team. But if there is a need on this team right now, if you look at the roster now and going forward into the next 2 years, if there's a need on this team going into the draft, it's pass rush. And they have an opportunity at number three to potentially get their favorite pass rusher in this draft. They'd have to really, really love Amari Cooper or Kevin White or somebody else so much if they were going to pass up that kind of opportunity. And nothing that I've heard says that they do. Of course, we all knew that Blake Bortles was going to be the pick at three last year, too. So any word coming out of here, who knows what it does or doesn't mean when everything is said and done. All right, a fun show today. Charles Davis, thank you again to him for joining us and talking a little bit about the upcoming NFL draft. Thank you to you for participating in the show today. Mike Dempsey will be back on Monday. Luke Jones joined me just a few moments ago to talk about Bernard Pierce and what he may or may not be adding. Don't like hearing that he's not comfortable in his own scheme, that he's more of a manpower guy, at least in his estimation, and that's why Baltimore wasn't so keen to even potentially keep him without the DUI and a potential suspension coming from the league. So you don't love hearing that kind of thing, but maybe it works for him a little bit better in Jacksonville. That's at least the hope. You give a guy like that a chance to compete. So thank you to Charles Davis. Thank you to Luke Jones, for Tyler Devitt, for Joe Fortunato, J.P. Shadrick, joining me early on in the program today. We will turn our attention to XL Primetime, who I'm sure will be squarely focused on March Madness after the first day of the tournament yesterday, and what a fantastic first day it was. 5 1-point games, including the highlight of the tournament thus far, right here in Jacksonville, with Georgia State upsetting Baylor in the fashion that they did. Unbelievable moment in the history of the tournament, much less just yesterday in the scope of everything else that went on. We'll hand it over to the guys of XL Primetime next here on 1010XL 92.5 FM.